Hello and welcome to the Majlis, a Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Nation on the edge and rumors looming large in Uzbekistan after President Karimov hospitalized with reported bleeding in the brain. Officials short in details, but indications are currently serious debate taking place behind the door about post-Karimov era in Uzbekistan. But one thing is certain, regardless of his condition today, future of Uzbek government headed by Karimov is in serious question. But how post-Karimov era will look like also left on really someone's guess. Today in the Majlis, we will be talking about all these questions. We'll be trying to separate facts from fictions and discuss about today's and tomorrow's Uzbekistan with most informed experts in this subject. From Prague, I'm joined by Alisher Siddiq, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, who really feels the pulse of local development. From Prague, joining me, Shahida Toluganova, native of Uzbekistan, who is currently producer and anchor at the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Russian language current time TV. Also joining me from Prague is Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. From Washington, I have Paul Stronsky, senior Central Asia analyst at Carnegie Endowment. Alisher, who's in charge of Uzbekistan today?
Yeah, in Uzbekistan, you know, given the nature of the regime, the business is as usual. And what we see that since the initial statement came out from the Cabinet of Ministers, we assume that Prime Minister is in charge at this moment. Is obviously backed by the security apparatus, and of course the security, you know, to keep everything under control, it's a big role of the security, which is headed by Rustam Inoyatov, who was considered the second most influential person after Karimov.
Shahid, about Karimov's current states of health, there are lots of reports, lots of rumors about him, so what do you know?
Well, despite the fact that officially he's still hospitalized, my sources say that he's dead, and we try to verify this information with multiple sources by joining our journalistic efforts and inside information, and it looks like he's dead. There's information coming from the ground that there's a little bit of chaos in the regions, even to the matters whether they should broadcast celebratory concerts or not on TV and stuff like that, which all gives me a sign that the man is dead. Now it has to be pronounced. It's a different question because before they do it, they have to sort out who is going to be in charge of this whole period of transition or non-transition or whatever, and whether they will still have some celebratory things on, in the 1st of September. When do they announce this news?
Right. So far, as you say, officials are not saying anything about the current states of health. Yes, Alisha, you want to jump in?
Just on Shahida's point regarding her sources, you know, there are a lot of conflicting reports at this moment. You know, and all sides claim that their sources say that he's dead or alive, but we don't think that this matters at this point. You know, we are discussing post-Karimov era, despite of the fact he's good and alive. You know, he's alive. The fact that he is not coming back to politics is more obvious. So from that point of view, I mean, the whole analysis we built is like on that. You know?
Obviously. Any sign today, any sign of extraordinary measures in the country? Earlier I saw reports that foreigners are not allowed to come in, people are not allowed to leave the country, even Tashkent is cordoned off, officials are kind of told to stay at home under police guard. Tell us more about that. Shahida, Alisher, who wants to jump in?
I think it's more Alisher's call.
We cannot say that the measures are extraordinary because it coincided with the celebration of Independence Day, and it seems, you know, it on prima facie that this is kind of business as usual on the eve of Independence Day, like every year. So if it would be any other day, yes, it would be like a serious matter. But yes, people are not allowed to enter Tashkent, though they are allowed to leave. In the regions, people are preparing for celebrations. Yes, official celebrations on the official celebration on August 31st were cancelled because obviously Karimov cannot talk and dance this time. This is like a major thing. But also, who would instead of him would be talking? That is like another thing that kind of, you know, forced them to cancel this year. Mm-hmm. Because anyone who would be talking instead of Karimov would be considered as a indicate that the power transition already kind of decided. So that's why, just to skip over all this mess and speculations, I think that decision was made like this.
Paul, how do you read these signs? And Alisher also added to that is cancellation of Independence Day celebration. That's kind of a 25th anniversary, very important one.
No, I agree. I mean, I think this was the big celebration that everyone was expecting. This was the time to sort of to celebrate Uzbek sovereignty and Uzbek statehood. And, you know, the fact that 25 years later, it's a strong state and one of the main powers in Central Asia. So I think, you know, his illness, whatever state he's in, I mean, I think these celebrations really forced their hand in having to announce this. And, you know, this is a country that is it's not terribly strong on its institutions. It's not terribly strong on its information. And there's no really, you know, clear sources of information. So, you know, the way that people get information is through rumors, and that can make it very, you know, confusing. And Uzbekistan is probably one of the most important countries in the region. So I think, you know, from Washington's perspective, you know, this is a time we all knew was coming, but it's, you know, the signs are a little bit concerning.
Bruce Shoida mentioned a word of chaotic here in the country, what it's going through at the moment. What is your take on that?
Well, you know, I mean, as much as anyone up at the top of the government would have expected this day to come sooner or later, you don't talk about these things publicly. And I think, this is the first time they've actually had to get together, you know, the top people in the government and discuss what they're going to do about the succession. So this is kind of uncharted territory. Knowing that something's going to happen is one thing, but actually having to face the reality that now is the time, and now we have to get something done, and we have to figure out how we're going to move forward. It's not something that Uzbek officials are really used to doing without having Karimov there to you know, give his blessing to any of these kind of decisions. So I think, you know, in this case, they're probably better off being silent, because it's better to say nothing at all than something you're going to regret and have to take back later. I'm sure there's a lot of discussions about how this is going to work, who's going to take charge, who's going to get other positions after that goes, because let's not forget, it's not just a question of trying to figure out who's going to be the next president. All the people that have been at the top for a long time are going to want some guarantees that they're staying somewhere and that their interests are going to be protected too under whoever is going to be the next leader of the country. So I'm not surprised at all. Their typical modus operandi is to say nothing at all for 3 or 4 days, even in the face of overwhelming evidence that something's gone wrong. So this is probably just about what you'd expect.
Right. Just to recap, today we are discussing situation surrounding health condition of Uzbekistan as President Karimov. Discussing the subject with me are from Prague, Alisher Sadiq, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service. Shahida Toliganova is joining me from Prague, who is the producer and anchor at the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Russian language current time TV. Bruce Panier is also joining me from Prague, who is the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi from Washington. I have Paul Stronsky, senior analyst at the Carnegie Endowment. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here at Arif Yarel's Washington office. Shahida, regardless of his current states of health, how much he or his family is relevant to what might happen in Uzbekistan going forward?
Well, it's a hard question, because the family when we talk about family, we talk about his first daughter, who was pretty much removed from anything significant in Uzbekistan a year or two ago. We're talking now about his second daughter, who allegedly runs a business with her husband. I don't think, even though these people have serious influence on what's going on, what will happen, and definitely, I think, on the issue of political succession, when we talk about, you know, people who do matter, are the people who are mentioned by Alisher before, and it's the chief of the National Security Service, Rustam Inayatov. That's the people who are to decide, not the family.
Obviously, we are talking about scenarios when Karimov no more in power. What happens if Karimov dies, or it was announced that he's no longer able to perform the function of the president? What is the next thing, Alisher, possibly might happen in Uzbekistan when this news is announced there?
We are waiting for any official announcement. Sure. And according to many experts, the most obvious date could be some day after. After independence,
yeah.
And let's not forget that they can keep him under, you know, life-saving for some time. But
obviously, we are talking, Alisher, about the scenario. In case when it is announced that he is no longer in power, what is the possible next step that you can expect in Uzbekistan?
Yes, we see several possible steps. According to constitution, chairman of Uzbek Senate should take over for 3 months, organize the elections in Uzbekistan, and then all these names should come out, you know, during this period of time. This is according to constitution. Everybody knows that a couple of years ago, Karimov came out with this initiative, or president's sickness or inability to perform as a president. They made these kind of amendments into Uzbek constitution. So, however, some experts also suggest that the situation can go Azerbaijani way, where prime minister will be inaugurated as a president, and then the new president elections is held. Like in Azerbaijan, if you know, following the death of Haydar Aliyev, the constitution was immediately changed. The constitution stated that prime minister is taking over, and prime minister is basically holding elections. So given the fact that prime minister Mirziyayev is considered one of the strongest, the only thing they should do, or they can do, theoretically, is just to change constitution.
Right. When Niyazov died in Turkmenistan back in 2006, legally the head of the parliament is supposed to take his place, but what we know later is Berdimuhamedov, a person unknown to public, came into power. Shahida, transition of power and my turn to Turkmen style in Uzbekistan?
This scenario I exclude. Could be that some resemblance of it. It's a different country. First of all, it's much bigger. It's much more complicated. There are people who have serious financial interests, as well as the interest of actually physical survival. I mean, we're not talking about just prime minister, but hundreds of people behind them who represent their clan, their network, and everything else. So they definitely need to sit down, and as Bruce rightly said, it's probably for the first time in their life, they sit down and decide what to do. And I really hope that they will come to their senses and achieve some kind of compromise and become very Uzbek in a way, saying, okay, let's not take our stuff, our quarrels outside the house. Let's keep up the appearances and come up with a decision which will still present Uzbekistan as a stable country and the house is in order.
Right. I think it's a right time to go through some of the possible names, Bruce, you earlier put out in your story. Can you please briefly talk about those names?
Well, of course, we've already mentioned Prime Minister Mirziyoyev, right. And we have mentioned the SNB chief, security chief. The other potential figure that people have been talking about for a long time is Rustam Azimov, who's the finance minister, also a deputy prime minister. So those are pretty much the only three that I can see that really would have any shot at this at all. You know, again, Inuyatov, I don't see him. He's always been a shadowy figure. He's not somebody who comes out in public and talks. He's got mobility problems, too. At least that's my understanding, and we don't know to what degree that's true. But without his support, there's not a chance in the world that anyone's getting in. He could make a huge amount of problems. As Ali Sheer rightly noted, he was the second most powerful man in the country after Karimov, and with Karimov incapacitated at the least at the moment, that would make him the most powerful man in the country. So it's really down to the Azimov or Mirziyoyev, and more a question of which one of those two Inuyatov would consider to be best suited to. Because in the end, let's face it, we're talking about regime preservation here. And that's what Inuyatov would be most interested in. What they don't want is any kind of drastic change or even slight change in the way business is being run right now. So whoever they put forward as the next candidate for the president is someone who's going to ensure the interests of all in Uzbekistan so that no one loses anything. What happens further down the line is another question, but the immediate question of everyone keep their post, everyone keep their money, everyone, you know, keep the businesses they own, whatever, that's got to be absolutely guaranteed. And before we even get to the point where they say someone shows up in front of the camera and says, okay, now I'm organizing the funeral, which everyone assumes will be the big sign of who's going to be the next, the second president of Uzbekistan.
Alisher, your take on these names, or maybe there are a few more that you want to add?
Yeah, on the contrary, I would shrink it, because Karimov was terribly, I mean, his rule was very terrible in terms of creating some charismatic figures. I mean, under his rule, nobody even dare to show any ambitions of such. So that's why without him, as Bruce rightly mentioned, it's very new experience. So that's why they are very modest at this moment still. So there is even a joke that doctors afraid to tell Karimov that he is dead. Everybody is afraid, and until the very last moment, you know, so nobody knows what to do. And the best guy with knowledge is, again, Rustam Inuyatov. He was collecting all this knowledge throughout these years, and they can really, take out some absolutely unknown figure from their own KGB, like National Security Service. Huh. It's very possible. There are names in who can do it, and we know from Russian experience that it is possible that the KGB guy can run the country, good or bad. Then we have Mirziyayev. Then we have to guess what kind of rule it will be, how it will be different from Karimov's. So with Mirziyayev, things will get worse. This is what analysts say. But Mirziyayev, very good at setting the bar high, you know, the bar of corruption, I don't know, kind of a, you know, this tyranny and whatever, you know, like mismanagement and everything. But Mirziyayev is quite good, and he can really hit that bar as well. So that's kind of a more scary future with Mirziyayev. At least this is what we hear.
Thank you, Alisher. We are obviously talking about likely scenario when Karimov no more in power. Shahida, you just mentioned, and also lots of foreign analysts keep talking about the rule of clans. Like people talk about Samarkand clan and Tashkent clan. What role do you think they might play in selection of the future leader?
But they're represented by exactly the same people which I mentioned earlier in the conversation, are the main contenders. It's, you know, to call it a clan is to simplify away. It's more than that. It's kind of extended family mixed with economic, financial interests mixed with anything else. It's complicated. I personally think that maybe the head of National Security Service, Mr. Inuyatov, would surprise us and select someone else. Some person who we know is in a government that we would never thought that he could take the lead, or somebody absolutely new. So I'm just sitting and waiting in anticipation of the surprise.
Mm-hmm. Paul, what rule foreign government might play going forward in Uzbekistan, especially in this selection of future leader, if that is the case?
I think, you know, foreign governments, I mean, I think they're going to be watching closely. I don't know how much influence foreign governments have as far as putting their candidate forward, but I am sure, you know, certain things are going to happen. I mean, I'm sure if they change the constitution or they're going to keep, you know, going according to the constitution. I mean, I think, you know, they're going to try to show that it's a rule of law society. So we'll be seeing a lot of things happening behind closed doors, not getting a whole lot of information. But once the decision is done, I think it will sort of follow some sort of orderly. And I think that's something that the West would be, you know, wanting to see, that there is some sort of order in how this change occurs. And, you know, that is, you know, possibly has the ambitions to do something, which could possibly be Russia. I mean, Russia is going to be watching very closely, hoping that whoever rises to the top is someone who is going to be favorable towards Russia and not too Western. You know, that, I think, whoever it is, I think is a given that's probably going to be more in that line. But I think, you know, I don't know how much individual meddling these countries are going to do. I think, you know, the outside world has less influence in this process than some people believe.
Bruce, talking about the post-Karimov scenario, how much it might affect Uzbekistan's own foreign policy going forward?
Well, there's some things that I think post-Karimov government want to keep in place. And, you know, Paul just mentioned the fact that Russia would probably be the only one that would, or certainly the foremost country, someone come to power that would be more in line with thinking in the Kremlin. And we got to give the Uzbek government a lot of credit for the fact that, you know, they have been better than most of the of the other governments in the former Soviet Union at resisting outside pressure. Their foreign policy is kind of has been very fickle under Karimov. There are more partnerships and alliances of convenience that often fall apart and then are reinvented again. But the one thing they've never stood for is outside interference, and then particularly from Russia. And that was the way it was from the very start. So they're not going to want anyone that's going to tell them the way they should run the business in their own country. That won't work. You know, with the Chinese, it'll probably be fairly easy. I would imagine China right now is just looking to preserve the status quo. Not much more influence than they have now, but certainly not less. And Western countries would like to see some changes, you know, opening up a little bit more democratic reform, but that's extremely unlikely to happen. So I don't think that Uzbekistan's foreign policy would change that much, except that initially whoever is in charge is going to need to be real tough and make that clear that you know, willing to have good relations with a lot of different countries. But, you know, again, don't tell us how to run our own country. We don't appreciate any kind of advice on that topic.
Alicia, can we expect any immediate regional implications of change of leadership in Uzbekistan, considering Uzbekistan has various issues with Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and some of its other neighbors?
You know, all these issues are, you know, connected with Karimov, but basically, generally, it's like beyond Karimov's kind of issues. You know, take Tajikistan, Rohun Dam. It's rather seen as a national interest that Tajikistan never built this Rohun Dam, which would leave the country without water. The same with Kyrgyzstan, you know, borders, terrorism, extremism thing, you know, like with Kazakhstan, it's more or less good. You know, sort of, it's not only Karimov who was kind of behind this isolation of Uzbekistan in the middle of all these countries. It's kind of it's more like the model that country have chosen. So if that model is not changed, so these things are not expected to, you know, to change in the nearest future. You know, I don't expect like drastic or change in the relations with the Central Asian countries.
Mm-hmm. Shahida, how the immediate neighbors of Uzbekistan is looking into developing situation there, how are they reacting so far?
There was no official reaction so far. I think everyone is sitting down and watching, being extremely nervous. You know, this is the end of the era, not only for Uzbekistan, but for Central Asia in general. I mean, this is the first so-called dinosaur president dying. And so, of course, it's the beginning of a change in the region. And nobody has any expectations of, I think the expectations are quite low about the change, but at least something is moving. The end of the era of the communist leaders who came to power is finishing.
Bruce Scheider is saying it's a beginning of a change in the region.
Well, certainly. I mean, if you're Nursultan Nazarbayev or Emomali Rahmon, this raises some questions for you and for the people of their countries, too, that, you know, it reminds everyone that nothing lasts forever, including their own leadership. So that's something that they're going to be considering, I'm sure, a lot in the future. It just continues on a point I made before, is that any future leader is not going to want to be seen as weak. Certainly in the very first days and months of his tenure as president of the country. And I would point to the situation that we have on the Uzbek-Kyrgyz border right now and that radio relay station at Ungartu. And, now this is something that the Kyrgyz, and with Karimov in power, there probably would have been some chance and the Uzbek troops would go. A new Uzbek president will not be in the same position for a lot longer of a time, where he won't want to be perceived to be weak and pull his troops back. So I think this is a real problem for Kyrgyzstan at the moment. And Alisher mentioned the Rogun Dam, too. And I would imagine that the next leader of Uzbekistan will be very, very clear and strict that they don't want this, and that it's going to be a lot of trouble for Tajikistan if they go ahead with this project. Unfortunately, I would expect there'll be some chilling messages sent to the eastern neighbors of Uzbekistan, which will also be heard very loudly in Turkmenistan and Kazakhstan too, where they try to figure out how to deal with this new leadership. But I would I can't imagine that the next president would be anything but hard and firm in his resolve not to give up, not to give in to any kind of outside pressure at all.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce Fanier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlak Oazi, for your insightful comments. Also, big thanks to my colleagues in Prague, Alisher Siddiq, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, Shahida Toliganova, producer and anchor at the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Russian language, Current Time TV from Washington, Paul Stronsky, senior Central Asia analyst at the Carnegie Endowment. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for being part of the Majlis today.
Thank you.
This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, the Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.